This is VFR Katura and you're listening to WGXC Accra 98.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Hilo Catskill, cafe, bar, art gallery, and performance space located at 365 Main Street, Catskill, New York. Waveform's WGXC is pleased to broadcast live from Hilo every Tuesday morning starting at 9 a.m. In addition, Hilo live events are streamed and broadcast in conjunction with the Waveform Radio Transmit Partner Program.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Andrew Barwick of Brooklyn, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
Radio broadcast, this I believe.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here.
Sarah Tapton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The question of what kind of structure would best serve as a garage for the new Greene County Jail in Coxsackie was raised at a special session of the legislature's Public Safety Committee September 16th. The garage, as proposed, is a $1.3 million building equipped with full heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system and restrooms. In March, the legislature deadlocked on whether to remove the garage from the jail plans. The Public Safety Committee Monday voted to purchase a $190,000 building for the Highway Department equipment storage. Catskill Representative Matt Lavera said, and I quote, "I don't see why we can't have this type of garage at the jail. If they are truly looking for a storage garage and not a training room or more office space, this would satisfy that need," end quote. He pointed out that the county already has a training room at the jail facility and another at the Emergency Services Building in Cairo, making any additional space redundant. Legislature Chairperson Patrick Linger said the two buildings would be used differently. He said, and I quote, "There is no concrete floor in the Morton building. They are two completely different buildings," end quote. According to Greene County Sheriff Greg Seeley, the jail's garage will be used by his office for the storage of boats, all-terrain vehicles, SWAT team trucks, and the canine unit. Linger put off further discussion about the garage until the next regular Public Safety Committee meeting October 2nd. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Amanda Purcell reports for Columbia Green Media that on September 17th, the Hudson Common Council voted to send a nine-month moratorium on new short-term lodging facilities to the Columbia County Planning Board for review. Common Council President Thomas DiPietro, a WGXC volunteer programmer, said, and I quote, "As you know, we are in the process of crafting a law that deals with short-term rentals, but in the meantime, because we want to do that correctly with a lot of public participation, we would like to propose this moratorium while we craft this law," end quote. Fourth Ward Alderperson John Rosenthal said of the moratorium, and I quote, "It does have a hardship provision. If anyone in the process is about to be putting an Airbnb online right now after the law is passed, they can come before the council, plead their hardship, and get an exemption," end quote. The other Fourth Ward Alderperson, Rich Volo, said, and I quote, "No one has seen it, a draft of the proposed law. The public hasn't seen this," end quote. Fifth Ward Alderperson, Dominic Maranti, First Ward Alderperson, Rob Bujan, Fifth Ward Alderperson, Eileen Hollerin, and Volo voted unsuccessfully to send the law back to the legal committee, with the rest of the council voting to send it to the county. The issue will be before the Hudson Legal Committee at 6:15 p.m. on September 25th at City Hall. Visit the WGXC Newsroom page to download or play the audio of the September 17th Hudson Common Council meeting recorded from a live web stream by WGXC volunteer Dan Udell. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Sarah Captain is reporting for Columbia Green Media. In the aftermath of the judicial victory scored by Wyndham Democrats Nick Bove and Natasha Schuster, it remains to be seen if a fraud investigation is forthcoming. Bove's attorney, Kevin Maldonado, said last week the Greene County District Attorney's Office and the State Attorney General's Office will decide if allegations of election fraud are pursued. Greene County District Attorney Joseph Stanzone said September 18th, there is currently no criminal case pending against Wyndham Democratic Party Chairperson Tom Pulker. Stanzone said, and I quote, "Whether there will be an investigation has yet to be determined. There has been talk of some improprieties. They may very well be an investigation, but nothing is pending per se," end quote. The Attorney General's office did not return calls for comment. Maldonado asked Bove's counterpart, Republican Thomas Hoyt, if he considered Polker's failure to get the party candidate's paperwork submitted on time to be an offense. Hoyt is the Wyndham Town Republican Party chairman. Hoyt said, and I quote, "I would have offered to take the paperwork down for Mr. Polker," end quote. Pressed further about getting involved in the matter, Hoyt maintained that he did not want to involve himself in another party's issues. Bove, candidate for Wyndham Town Supervisor, and Schuster, candidate for Wyndham Town Board, sued Polker after the committee chairperson failed to submit the required paperwork to secure their places on the ballot for the general election by the July 25th deadline. Judge Lisa Fisher ruled in their favor last week, and their names will now appear on the Democratic line in November. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Brenda J. Lyons is reporting for the Times Union. The former chief of staff for Republican first-term State Senator Daphne Jordan has filed a human rights complaint alleging the lawmaker unfairly and inappropriately terminated his employment in July. Chris Thompson, a longtime Senate GOP aide and former confidant and press secretary for former State Senate Majority Leader Joseph L. Bruno, is accusing Jordan of violating his, and I quote, "basic human rights," end quote, including asking him to pull a candy wagon in a parade last March while dressed as a leprechaun. Thomas's complaint states, and I quote, "I felt that my direct supervisor, Jordan, violated my basic human rights by directing me to wear clothes not befitting of a 61-year-old grown man. Dressing me up as a leprechaun is wrong. A supervisor, let alone a sitting state senator, should exercise better judgment than to send such images to a subordinate. I refused to wear the clothes to the parade," end quote. Thomas said the day after he refused to attend a fundraiser for the senator in Half Moon, Jordan fired him in front of two other staff members, and he was escorted from the state capitol, and I quote, "like a criminal," end quote. He filed the complaint August 20th with the State Division of Human Rights. Jordan's spokesperson, Joshua Fitzpatrick, issued a statement September 18th after a story about the accusations appeared in the Times Union, saying the, and I quote, "allegations are baseless and wholly without merit, and frankly, it's very sad that a disgruntled and terminated employee would lie in such a manner," end quote. A spokesperson for Senate Minority Leader John J. Flanagan declined to comment. Read the full story in the Times Union. Amanda Purcell is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The City of Hudson and the U.S. Department of Justice are close to a settlement agreement in a case filed by three city residents alleging a lack of accommodations in public spaces required by the American with Disabilities Act. The three complainants took action arguing the city's sidewalks are inaccessible and the entrances to City Hall, Promenade Hill Park, and other locations are also inaccessible. An investigation by the federal government determined the city was out of compliance in several categories. Under the settlement agreement, the city must take remedial action within 30 days, including the appointment of an ADA coordinator responsible for investigating ADA-related complaints. The coordinator must receive training within 90 days. The city must also establish a grievance procedure for processing complaints. Mayor Rick Rector said September 9th, and I quote, "The city of Hudson is working closely with all relevant parties in both reviewing issues and determining steps towards resolving those that we are able to. We have and continue to be engaged in productive meetings with various government representatives from Washington, D.C. regarding ADA compliance." Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. MidHudsonNews.com is reporting the State Department, September 19th, released its jobs report for the 12-month period ending in August. The department reported a 17.1% increase in new jobs in Sullivan County, the highest increase reported statewide. The Ithaca metro area came in second with a 4.4% increase. Columbia County reported a new job rate of 2.8%, followed by Ulster County at 2.6%, Greene County with 1.9% growth, and the Dutchess Putnam Metropolitan Division with 1.6% increase. The number of private sector jobs in the region grew by just under 12,000 to 824,000. Gains were largest in educational and health services, leisure and hospitality, and natural resources, mining and constructions. Jobs were lost in trade, transportation, and utilities, and professional and business services. Holly Otterbein is reporting for Politico New York. The campaign manager for Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders, September 19th, sent a letter to the Democratic National Committee urging it to demand that Governor Andrew M. Cuomo approve legislation to extend New York's deadline for voters to change their party registration. The deadline is less than a month away. Fraz Shakir wrote, and I quote, "In 2016, countless voters across the state of New York were disenfranchised by the state's arcane and inexcusable early party affiliation deadline. Countless voters whose first attempt to engage with the Democratic Party saw them turned away," end quote. The state legislature passed a bill this summer to let voters change their party affiliation by February 14, 2020, but Cuomo has not signed it. A Cuomo aide said the governor intends to sign the bill into law. Read the full story at Politico New York. Aaron Croak is reporting for the Poughkeepsie Journal. The 2019 leaf peeping season has begun with the launch of New York's annual fall foliage forecast this week. The first signs of autumn color has started to appear mostly in the Adirondacks in areas like Saranac Lake, Tupper Lake, and Malone, and along the St. Lawrence River in the Thousand Island Seaway region. The fall foliage reports are based on observations of volunteer field observers. The reports are updated weekly on Wednesdays and are available at ilovenewyork.com. According to Cornell University, the most important factor for leaves to change color is the shortening of the day length. But how warm the fall days are, combined with how warm or cool the nights are, will determine vibrancy. The Farmer's Almanac is predicting better colors than last season, arriving right on time. Read the full story in the Poughkeepsie Journal. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, sunny with a high near 79 degrees. Saturday night, mostly clear with a low of around 54. And on Sunday, sunny with a high near 84 degrees. Sunday night, a slight chance of showers after 2 a.m. It will be partly cloudy with a low of around 63 degrees. So there you have your weather update brought to you by WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, and you can add your own.
by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at wgxc.org, including some of these events.
On Saturday, September 21st, the Way Out Gallery in Rensselaerville will be showing dry pigment paintings and photographs in Light Touch by Philippe Mazzol, and will be open on weekends in September through the 22nd. Master storyteller Tom Lee uses art, objects, history, and interactivity at Olana's main house and surrounding landscape to tell a stunning Syrian folktale at the Olana State Historic Site in Hudson at 10 a.m. Arts educator, writer, director, and performer Pamela Badia reads and tells traditional stories from around the world with music and performance, and leads a related craft with children and their families every first and third Saturday, open to children of all ages at the Hudson Area Library starting at 11 a.m. Core Strength and Balance Workshop with Phil Spector will introduce exercises that improve postural stability, core strength, spatial body awareness, sensory integration, agility, and coordination at the Hudson Area Library starting at 1:30 p.m. The City of Hudson Senior Center and the Hudson Area Library host watercolor painting with local artist Gretchen Kelly from 2 to 4 p.m. All ages, beginner and intermediate, paint from seasonal still lifes, objects, and photos. Learn basic techniques or just hang out and paint with others. All materials will be provided. Registration is required at programs@hudsonarealibrary.org. Toko Tilo and Katani perform at the final event of the Spirit of the Suffragettes Summer Concert Series, a music series and community resource fair showcasing women and gender nonconforming musicians from international to local, open to the public at St. James Place in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, beginning at 5 p.m. Chris Brokaw, Bill Nace, and Kapaki's PG6 perform at Tubby's in Kingston at 8 p.m. Will Fox from Los Angeles will be passing through Catskill with full band in tow to play selections from his new album, Which Way. Eric Cardona, a.k.a. Mr. Twin Sister, is from New York City and plays electronic dream pop at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill starting at 8:30 p.m. On Sunday, September 22nd, the Way Out Gallery in Rensselaerville presents The Closing Day for Light Touch by Philippe Mazzol. Yoga of the Earth is a monthly gentle morning yoga practice with teacher Stephanie Fisher and is backdropped by Olana's expansive Hudson River views at the Olana State Historic Site in Hudson beginning at 9 a.m. That's it for this week's WGXC Community Calendar. You can add your own event and hear it right here on the radio by visiting WGXC.org and clicking on the calendar link at the top of the page.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Wendy Schmaltz of Claverick, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is ARRL Audio News, your weekly summary of news highlights from the world of amateur radio. If you retransmit audio news through a repeater, listen for the Morse code K character, followed by 4 seconds of silence. That's your cue to stop transmitting so that your repeater timer can reset. I'm Steve Ford, WBAIMY. Carla Pereira is on assignment. In ex parte comments filed on September 17th in docket 16-239, ARRL renewed its request that the FCC delete symbol rate limits for data transmissions in the amateur radio service rules. As it did in its initial filing, ARRL asked the FCC to couple the removal of the symbol rate limits with the adoption of a 2.8 kHz band limit. In response to a 2013 ARRL petition for rulemaking, the FCC proposed deleting the symbol rate limits, but declined to replace them with the 2.8 kHz bandwidth that ARRL wanted. ARRL's remarks also addressed issues raised by other parties. Quote, "The issues discussed with the parties are outside the scope of this docket and would require a further notice of proposed rulemaking before final consideration. Some of the same issues are also raised in petitions for rulemaking on which the Commission has sought comment. Given the policy as well as factual disagreements evidenced on the record, we understand that the Commission may decide to consider some of these issues," unquote. The Mount Diablo Amateur Radio Club Disaster Recovery Program for the 2018 Carr and Camp Fires has made a $1,000 grant to the California Amateur Radio Linking Association toward the cost of rebuilding one of its destroyed repeater sites. The CARLA network of repeaters provides coverage across California and western Nevada to provide reliable communication during significant local, regional, and wide area incidents. The MDARC Board of Directors has established a fund to assist organizations that have suffered ham system losses as the result of the fires, and it continues to seek additional clubs with fire damage systems that may require financial aid to rebuild. The club recognizes that many of these repeater systems are in critical areas that otherwise may have very little amateur radio or cellular coverage, and are vital in providing important disaster traffic. Well-known Canadian radio amateur Jay Allen, VY1JA of Whitehorse, Yukon Territory, has announced that he's retiring from ham radio, citing long-term health issues and hearing loss. The familiar VY1JA call sign has also been retired. Allen will begin dismantling his station and antennas as early as this weekend. His last contact was with KA4UPI on September the 14th. He has uploaded his logs to Logbook of the World and sent copies to his QSL managers. For years, VY1JA was an eagerly sought multiplier in the ARRL November sweepstakes and other events, as well as a needed DX zone in contests. AMSAT reports that an Antares 2 launch vehicle will carry 15 CubeSats into orbit on October 21st as part of a NASA educational launch of nanosatellites. Some of these will carry amateur radio payloads. For example, TJ Reverb, developed by students at Thomas Jefferson High School in Alexandria, Virginia, will carry a 145.825 MHz APRS digipeater. HuskySat, a University of Washington Seattle project, will be boosted into a 500-kilometer orbit via the Cygnus external deployment device. HuskySat will carry a linear transponder provided in cooperation with AMSAT. Radio World reports that the People's Democratic Republic of Korea has resumed testing digital radio broadcasting on the 80-meter amateur band after a two-year absence. North Korea is transmitting with the Digital Radio Mondial Protocol. The latest transmission was on 3.560 MHz, and it began in mid-August. According to radio enthusiasts in the region, the signal has been very clear and very audible. Radio World says the Voice of Korea, the North Korean International Broadcasting Service, has conducted DRM trials on and off since 2012. In DX News, WH0RU will be wrapping up their expedition on the Mariana Islands this weekend. You also have a few more days to catch 6070 in Somalia, C21WW on Nauru, and E-51SFS on the South Cook Islands. It looks like this weekend is going to be particularly active for special event stations. Here's a partial list. K2R will be on 40 meters celebrating 150 years of Rutgers University football. K4MIA will be active on 17, 20, and 40 meters commemorating POWMIA Recognition Day. Listen for W3M on 17, 20, 40, and 80 meters at the 19,000-year-old Meadowcroft dig site. W3L will be celebrating the saving of the Liberty Bell on 20 and 40 meters. W5P will be on the air from the Plano Balloon Festival on 40 and 20 meters. W4CA will be celebrating the construction of the Blue Ridge Parkway on 40 and 20 meters. NM5HD will be on the air, both figuratively and literally, on 20 meters for the EAA Chapter 179 fly-in. Look for N2R on 20-meter sideband during the New Jersey Royal Rangers District powwow. N3M will take to the air from the National Museum of Industrial History on 40 and 20 meters. K7T will be remembering Apache warrior Geronimo on 40 and 20 meters. You'll find W0ALX on the air from the Runestone Museum on 20 and 40. W1M will be operating for scout camps on the air on 20 and 40 meters. W3GBH will be active on 20 and 40 for the Skyview Radio Society Founders Day. It's the 75th anniversary of the Voice of America Bethany Relay Station near Cincinnati, and WC8VOA will be taking to the airwaves on 20 meters. And finally, listen for K8FBI on 20 and 40 during the Flying Beers Fall Fundraiser. You'll find complete QSL information and more in the September issue of QST Magazine. If you're in the mood for a ham fest this weekend, you have your choice of several. You'll find hams gathering in Lincoln, California, Hutchinson, Kansas, Peoria, Illinois for the ARRL Illinois State Convention, Alexander, Maine on Saturday and Windsor, Maine on Sunday, and Ferndale, Michigan on Sunday. All the details are in the Conventions and Hamfest section of the September issue of QST. And now with this week's satellite update, here's Bruce Page, KK5DO.
From the AMSAT Corporate Secretary Clayton Coleman, W5PFG, we have the results of the AMSAT Board of Directors election. This is the first time that AMSAT did both mail-in ballots or digital ballots. The choice was up to the member. 892 ballots were cast electronically and 160 paper ballots were cast. Jerry Buxton, N0JY, Drew Glassbrenner, KO4MA, Patrick Stoddard, WD9EWK, and Michelle Thompson, W5NYV, will serve on the board for 2 years. The first alternate is Brennan Price, N4QX. The second alternate is Howard or Howie DeFelice, AB2S. Both will serve for a term of 1 year. FO29 is still experiencing difficulties. The command stations are asking for reception reports from the telemetry to be sent to OPER@JARL.org. The beacon is on 435.795 MHz CW. FO29 is one of the older satellites launched August 17, 1996. This is Bruce Page, KK5DO, for the ARRL Audio News.
This is the ARRL Audio News propagation forecast for Friday, September 20th. There are still no spots on the sun, and the solar index is stuck at 68. The good news is the geomagnetic conditions are fairly quiet. The next chance for a disruption will be coming early next week. Now that we've entered autumn here in the Northern Hemisphere, conditions on the low bands are starting to improve, especially on 160 and 80 meters. Look for your best DX conditions there. On VHF and UHF, that hotspot for tropospheric ducting is still hovering over Illinois, Michigan, Indiana, and Ohio. There may be some eastern movement next week, but if you live in that part of the country, keep your ears to your radios.
And that concludes ARRL Audio News for this week. Our thanks to all contributors to this week's report.
WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra.
Find out where the music takes you on the next Deep Threes as Arturo O'Farrell, DJ Logic, and the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra mix it up in Cuba. Three-quarter piece makes a jazzy, diplomatic overture, and the On Trio takes a long acoustic holiday. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes Mondays at noon after the news on WGXC 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Christine Boak of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Greta Thunberg, change is coming, whether you like it or not. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan in our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. 16-year-old Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg has sparked a global movement with her school strike for the climate. Last year, she started skipping school Fridays to stand outside the Swedish parliament demanding climate action. Since then, she's inspired millions around the world to join her. The final two Fridays of this month, September 20th and 27th, are expected to be some of the largest global protests in history. These two strike days fall on either side of the United Nations Climate Action Summit on Monday, September 23rd. Organized during the UN's annual General Assembly meeting, which brings leaders from around the world to New York City, the Climate Action Summit aims to, quote, spark the transformation that's urgently needed and propel action that will benefit everyone. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres described the urgency of the moment this week.
July was the hottest month ever. These 5 years will be the hottest 5 years in record. We see the rising level of the ocean taking place, the highest concentrations ever of CO2 in the atmosphere. We need to go back 3 to 5 million years to get the same levels of CO2. And at that time, water level was 10 to 20 meters higher than what it is today. So we are really dealing with a very dramatic threat, not only to the future of the planet, but to the planet today.
Greta Thunberg arrived in New York City August 28th after a two-week voyage aboard a zero-emissions high-speed sailboat. Since then, she's been on the go, joining youth school strikes at the United Nations and in front of the White House, giving scores of interviews and engaging with grassroots activists, politicians, and others to demand urgent action. On Monday night, in recognition for her work linking the climate emergency to human rights, Amnesty International gave her its 2019 Ambassador of Conscience Award.
Right now, I think there is an awakening going on. Even though it is slow, the pace is picking up and the debate is shifting. This is thanks to a lot of different reasons, but it is a lot because of countless of activists, and especially young activists. Activism works. So what I'm telling you to do now is to act, because no one is too small to make a difference. I'm urging all of you to take part in the global climate strikes on September 20th and 27th. And just one last thing. See you on the streets.
The Paris Climate Agreement, signed by almost every nation in 2015, was supposed to accelerate the transition from fossil fuels to renewables. President Donald Trump announced his intention to pull the United States out of the agreement on June 1, 2017, failing to note that the earliest date the U.S. could leave would be November 2020. That's why the Trump administration has been sending low-level officials to the annual UN climate summits, where they spend their time promoting coal and other fossil fuels while energetically avoiding questions from the press. Despite the Paris Agreement, the planet as a whole continues to burn more fossil fuels. In a report issued just over a week ago, the U.S. Energy Information Administration predicted global petroleum consumption for the first time ever would surpass 100 million barrels per day in 2019. The International Energy Agency stated recently, despite legitimate concerns about air pollution and greenhouse gas emissions, coal use will continue to be significant in the future, and that coal comprises 27% of all energy used worldwide and 38% of electricity generation, they said. The rapid transition away from fossil fuels to a fully renewable energy economy will require a cooperative global effort unprecedented in history. Several versions of this needed transformation for the United States have been articulated, first in the Green New Deal bill proposed by New York Democratic Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Massachusetts Democratic Senator Ed Markey. 2020 presidential hopeful Senator Bernie Sanders has put forth a $16.3 trillion plan that he says would create 20 million jobs and pay for itself within 15 years. His plan also promotes environmental justice. Quote, in a truly inclusive movement that prioritizes young people, workers, indigenous people, communities of color, and other historically marginalized groups, he said. Greta Thunberg's words from last December's UN climate summit in Katowice, Poland, bear repeating. The two-week ministerial meeting was almost over. The plenary schedule was running late. At close to midnight, Greta, then 15 years old, gave a short, powerful address. She rocked the hall. Her words quickly resonated around the world.
We have not come here to beg world leaders to care. You have ignored us in the past, and you will ignore us again. We have run out of excuses, and we are running out of time. We have come here to let you know that change is coming, whether you like it or not. The real power belongs to the people. Thank you.
On Tuesday, after sustained protests for several years, the University of California announced it's divesting its $84 billion pension and endowment funds of all fossil fuel investments. The storms that batter island nations from the Bahamas to the Philippines and coastal communities from Florida to Newfoundland are occurring with greater frequency and greater strength. In response, a rapidly growing global movement of climate activists led by youth is heating up as well. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Amanda Purcell is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The City of Hudson and the U.S. Department of Justice are close to a settlement agreement in a case filed by three city residents alleging a lack of accommodations in public spaces required by the American with Disabilities Act. The three complainants took action arguing the city's sidewalks are inaccessible and the entrances to City Hall, Promenade Hill Park, and other locations are also inaccessible. An investigation by the federal government determined the city was out of compliance in several categories. Under the settlement agreement, the city must take remedial action within 30 days, including the appointment of an ADA coordinator responsible for investigating ADA-related complaints. The coordinator must receive training within 90 days. The city must also establish a grievance procedure for processing complaints. Mayor Rick Rector said September 9th, and I quote, "The City of Hudson is working closely with all relevant parties in both reviewing issues and determining steps towards resolving those that we are able to. We have and continue to be engaged in productive meetings with various government representatives from Washington, D.C. regarding ADA compliance." Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. MidHudsonNews.com is reporting the State Department, September 19th, released its jobs report for the 12-month period ending in August. The department reported a 17.1% increase in new jobs in Sullivan County, the highest increase reported statewide. The Ithaca metro area came in second with a 4.4% increase. Columbia County reported a new job rate of 2.8%, followed by Ulster County at 2.6%, Greene County with 1.9% growth, and the Dutchess Putnam Metropolitan Division with 1.6% increase. The number of private sector jobs in the region grew by just under 12,000 to 824,000. Gains were largest in educational and health services, leisure and hospitality, and natural resources, mining and constructions. Jobs were lost in trade, transportation and utilities, and professional and business services. Holly Otterbein is reporting for Politico New York. The campaign manager for Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders, September 19th, sent a letter to the Democratic National Committee urging it to demand that Governor Andrew M. Cuomo approve legislation to extend New York's deadline for voters to change their party registration. The deadline is less than a month away. Fraz Shakir wrote, and I quote, "In 2016, countless voters across the state of New York were disenfranchised by the state's arcane and inexcusable early party affiliation deadline. Countless voters whose first attempt to engage with the Democratic Party saw them turned away," end quote. The state legislature passed a bill this summer to let voters change their party affiliation by February 14, 2020, but Cuomo has not signed it. A Cuomo aide said the governor intends to sign the bill into law. Read the full story at Politico New York. Aaron Croak is reporting for the Poughkeepsie Journal. The 2019 leaf peeping season has begun with the launch of New York's annual fall foliage forecast this week. The first signs of autumn color has started to appear mostly in the Adirondacks in areas like Saranac Lake, Tupper Lake, and Malone, and along the St. Lawrence River in the Thousand Island Seaway region. The fall foliage reports are based on observations of volunteer field observers. The reports are updated weekly on Wednesdays and are available at ilovenewyork.com. According to Cornell University, the most important factor for leaves to change color is the shortening of the day length. But how warm the fall days are combined with how warm or cool the nights are, will determine vibrancy. The Farmer's Almanac is predicting better colors than last season, arriving right on time. Read the full story in the Poughkeepsie Journal. And that wraps up the WGXE Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, visit our website, WGXE.org. From the WGXE Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend. Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, sunny with a high near 79 degrees. Saturday night, mostly clear with a low of around 54. And on Sunday, sunny with a high near 84 degrees. Sunday night, a slight chance of showers after 2 a.m. It will be partly cloudy with a low of around 63 degrees. So there you have your weather update brought to you by WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Hi, this is Linda Tripp, 4-H educator for Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties. Visit the Catterskill Gallery at Columbia Greene Community College in October to view the 4-H art exhibit showcasing block prints from over 75 4-H club members. Join us for the opening reception on Thursday, October 10th from 5 to 7 p.m. Cornell Cooperative Extension provides equal program and employment opportunities.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Mary Chatham of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2186, with a release date of Friday, September 20th, 2019, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. An IP address sell-off benefits ARIS, but displaces Germany's Hamnet. North Korea's tests of digital radio Mondial impacts a calling frequency. And hams try for Work Doll States Satellite Edition. All this and more as Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2186 comes your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. And now reporting from Valparaiso, Indiana, here's Paul Brown, WD9GCO.
Our top story this week is about the impact of a recent sale of IP addresses by the nonprofit Amateur Radio Digital Communications. There are some winners, and there are also some who will face new challenges. Ed Durant, DD5LP, picks that story up for us.
One of the items of great concern at the Hamnet conference, taking place on the 28th of September in Passau, Germany, is the recent unexpected sale of the upper portion of the AMPRNet address range that includes IP addresses that have been used in Germany's Hamnet amateur microwave data network. Amazon Web Services recently purchased one quarter of the IP version 4 address range for commercial use on the internet. For DL Hamnet, this means that all addresses customarily used by participating amateurs must be relocated to another range. At the conference in Passau, the IP coordination team will discuss the transition that will have to happen in the wake of the reported $16.8 million sale by Amateur Radio Digital Communications. The ARDC, which is a non-profit organisation supporting radio experimentation, says on its website that the sale of the estimated 4 million addresses businesses will help them generate funds for their philanthropic efforts. These include supporting ham radio in space with a recently announced sizable contribution to the cost of the development and creation of the interoperable communication system, including SSTV and HamTV2, which is to be sent to the International Space Station hopefully by year's end, and to ARIS's plans for the future Lunar Gateway Initiative. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Ed Durant, DD5LP.
Testing of a digital radio mode by North Korea could have impact on some CW users on 80 meters. Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, has the details.
In North Korea, where intermittent trials of Digital Radio Mondial, or DRM, have been conducted since 2012, testing has resumed according to a recent report by Radio World. The report notes that the protocol is being used on 80 meters at 3.560 megahertz, a frequency allocated for amateur radio operators and used by many as one of the international QRP calling frequencies for CW. Radio World said it was unclear how long the testing would continue or whether it would evolve into regularly scheduled services. The transmissions are being sent by Voice of Korea, which is North Korea's international broadcasting service. Other countries have also been making use of DRM, including India, where All India Radio, the nation's public service broadcaster, adopted the standard for the medium and shortwave part of the spectrum. Broadcasters who have been turning to DRM for AM transmissions say they are capitalizing on the mode's sound quality, which approximates that of FM. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Boot, G4NJH.
The Hurricane Watch Net activated on Wednesday, September 18th, on 20 and 40 meters, as net manager Bobby Graves, KB5HAV, announced that four storm systems were under observation. Bobby said the storm uppermost in everyone's sights was Hurricane Humberto, which, as of midweek, was poised to have an impact on Bermuda. Bobby said the net's activation plan could change, and ground truth data supplied from those in the affected area were a guide to the operator's plan of action. This is the latest information Newsline had as it went to production on the night of September 19th. Please visit our Facebook and Twitter accounts for further updates. In Japan, a dedicated group of YLs is helping cultivate a new group of operators. For that story, we turn to Jim Meechan, ZL2BHF.
Members of the Japan Ladies Radio Society believe that meaningful contacts on the air often start with meaningful contacts in person. That's exactly what happened at the Tokyo Ham Fair in late August, when newly licensed YLs stopped by the group's booth for guidance on their shacks or getting started on the air. The group's DX chair, Yukiko Maki, 7K4TKB, told Newsline that the Radio Society had introduced a mentoring program for newcomers last year, so they were more than ready to help. She told Newsline, quote, "The objective is to help them enjoy amateur radio together, because we realize there are many YLs who do not know what to do next after obtaining their operator licenses, and sometimes they hesitate to ask for help in the male-dominated world of amateur radio." End quote. There is now a manual for beginners on how to make their first QSO, and members follow up with contacts and give signal reports. Yukiko told Newsline that the mentoring program is called Wakaba Support, because Wakaba in Japanese means both young leaf and newcomer. With hard work and the support of this new mentoring program, many of these young leaves can soon hope to blossom into active operators. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Meechan, ZL2BHF.
One Florida group of hams and teachers has an ambitious schedule of balloon launches, and it's anything but inflated. Dave Parks, WB8ODF, tells us more.
Educators and radio amateurs in Florida are teaming up for 4 months of balloon launches that combine HF radio, telemetry, physics, coding, and other disciplines in an effort called the Miami High Altitude Circumnavigating Balloon Project. Teachers and university students involved in science, technology, engineering, or math programs are invited to get on board with these launches, which will send balloons up to a maximum altitude of 10,000 meters, or 32,800 feet. The launch dates have been set for November and December of this year, and January and February in 2020. The project is receiving technical assistance from German amateur Stefan, DK3SB, who will be giving input on payload design and assembly, launch planning, tracking, and the balloons themselves. The balloons are, of course, being designed to be trackable following their launch, and their light payload will be powered by solar cells. During daylight hours, GPS and hybrid WSPR mode signals will transmit ID, altitude, location, voltage, and temperature every 2 minutes. Organizers are hoping to get participants on board in time for the startup of the first launch. Interested amateurs are being asked to send emails to miamihab@gmail.com. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Dave Parks, WB8ODF.
One college campus has a new group of radio amateurs thanks to the CubeSat project they collaborated on. Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, has been following this story.
What began as a campus CubeSat club at a Pennsylvania university has become a launch pad for the group of engineering undergraduates who form its core membership. The Villanova CubeSat Club has become home to newly licensed radio amateurs. Dawson Duckworth, KC3NNB, Lauren Hurley, KD2RHC, and Kashwan G, AC3EN. They had a busy year since the club was founded in 2018 under the direction of faculty advisor Alan Johnston, KU2Y, who is a volunteer with AMSAT and serves as its vice president for education outreach. This year's ambitious agenda includes new challenges for the club. Members hope to launch weather balloons with CubeSats attached to conduct low orbit testing, and they plan to build a permanent SatNog station on the roof of one of the campus buildings. One of the SatNogs functions as a part of an open satellite ground station network is to provide interoperability, not just with current systems, but any that would be created in the future. The club recently appeared at a RoboStock Robotics / Steam event sponsored by the Eastern Pennsylvania Robotics Alliance. While there, they demonstrated an ABSAT CubeSat simulator developed by their faculty advisor and treated visitors to a viewing of a live low Earth orbit satellite tracking screen. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W4EDP repeater on Wednesdays at 7:30 p.m. local time in Chattanooga and Lookout Mountain, Tennessee. In South Africa, the assault on RF noise continues. Robert Broomhead, VK3DN, brings us up to date.
Amateur radio operators interested in assisting with the RF noise monitoring program of the South African Radio League are assembling at a workshop on the 28th of September to explore noise reduction options and review the AMSAT RF noise monitoring system. Hams will be guided through a hands-on session on how to use a laptop or desktop computer with a dongle to identify RF noise sources around the home. There'll also be an opportunity to learn how to set up a noise monitoring station. Newsline reported in 2017 that the South African amateurs undertook a detailed study that year to monitor the rising RF noise floor and devise ways to mitigate it. On its website, the League notes that the rising RF noise floor has long-term consequences for ham radio because the source of interfering devices, such as RF heated cooking appliances, LED lights, electrical saving lamps, and ultimately wireless-powered transmission for electric vehicles, will be everywhere. AMSAT South Africa has been supporting a noise interference monitoring system for HF that comprises of a number of remote stations. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Robert Broomhead, VK3DN.
The week ahead is a busy one for radio scouts, as Bill Stearns, NE4RD, tells us.
This week in radio scouting, we have three activations of the K2BSA call sign, and we're 1 month away from Jamboree on the air. David Brett, KD8NZF, will be activating K2BSA Portable 8 at Camp Stombaugh in Canfield, Ohio on September 21st. The Mahoning Valley Amateur Radio Association has been tasked with operating a demonstration station for the 100th anniversary of the camp. Visitors to the stations will get a tour of the antennas and operating positions explaining the purpose of each component, and we'll see scouts getting on the air. Michael McBride, K6MJM, will be activating K2BSA Portable 6 at Adventure Weekend in San Bernardino, California from September 27th through the 29th. The San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department hosts the annual PRCA rodeo and invites scouts to come camp and have adventure. The W445 Radio Group will be providing radio, electronics, and sign signals and codes merit badges. Frank Manyard, NF8M, will be activating K2BSA Portable 8 at the 2019 Rendezvous in Detroit, Michigan from September 28th through the 30th. The 2019 Rendezvous exists to unite the scouting community for a weekend that energizes and excites attendees through world-class programs, exhibits, activities, and shows. Jamboree on the Air is only a month away, always the third full weekend of October, and this year that's October 18th through the 20th. We have over 100 U.S. stations currently registered for JOTA, and with a month left, now is the time to get registered. For more information on this and radio scouting, please visit our website at k2bsa.net. For amateur radio.